Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, June 6th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everyone. It is 64 degrees and raining here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Architects of Life, DNA Ownership Fine Print, and CRISPR Evolution. We had talked about a lot of things. We had looked at Ancestry.com, and apparently once you check that box and give your cheek swab or spit vial to them to find out whether or not you are related to the Queen of England, you give them a forever license to utilize your DNA and that DNA of your, I think you said, descendants, in any way that they see fit, commercially or otherwise. You will also, at least for this point, still own your DNA, and you can opt out. Something that I want to spend some time trying to figure out how to do. So I think that would be a pretty neat campaign against the 21st century. But, you know, the disturbing fact of the matter is this whole question as to who owns our DNA, who literally owns life. Well, the ones that own it are the ones who build it, and the ones who build it don't only know how to turn it on, but they know how to turn it off with the push of a button. And that is something that these architects, these trying to be gods, architects of human 2.0, Earth 2.0, want to manipulate, create, and control all to their own blueprint. And that's where the problem lies. It's in the blueprint. Because I didn't sign off on this blueprint. I don't think most of us have, and I don't think most people even know there is a blueprint that is being carried out here. You know, we've pulled a lot of threads on this sweater, and it's starting to get really natty and ugly. It's one of those, it's not even something that you'd wear as an ugly Christmas sweater. You know, we spent some time looking at Georgie Porgy Church and CRISPR and some of this gene editing technology and all the wonders that they're trying to promise us. But what we didn't realize in the beginning, maybe we did, because we spent a lot of time looking at quote-unquote mental health to cure you with Tommy Insel now working for Google's Verily, being able to potentially diagnose you by the sound of your voice with Dr. Smartphone. You know, this brain initiative that Obama rolled out back in, I think it was 2013, maybe 2013, I think, has spun out millions of dollars in investment in public and private institutions. Not only across this country, but globally, there is an entire brain initiative as well that is being orchestrated through private meetings and international organizations. And, you know, they keep telling us is to cure this and to cure that. And, oh, my God, look, we have all these, you know, brain disorders now, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, memory-wasting diseases. But we also have this violence problem, radicalism. Mental health is just, people are so depressed. 70% of American adults are in some sort of, I don't remember if it was an antidepressant or just drugs in general, but it's a huge, huge number of individuals, and it's all to cure you. You know, just zippity-zap a few chemicals. We found out DARPA's been doing research on brain chemicals and prosthetics and manipulation, again, to cure brain injuries, quote-unquote injuries, PTSD, after effects. But what has come out of this? that IARPA project, their Apollo project for the brain, is one of the projects we looked at just recently, and we found out Georgia Church is involved in that one as well. And that is a reverse engineering of the brain in order to make better artificial intelligence with the Central Intelligence Agency's version of DARPA being the central point of the research. Georgie's helping them barcode all the neurons. Remember, as they're doing this, they are tinkering with pushing buttons and making connections just like a kid learning to use a breadboard. I'd mentioned that before, but that's what it makes me think of. Back in the early days in the 80s, you know, I had an electrical engineer and a physicist. He was too. He was both. He was a little smarty pants, his boyfriend. And he was always building little creations, and as part of his projects, he had to build like an amplifier from scratch and Bernie proms and all this crazy stuff. So I was there. I saw like the early days and how to construct these machines from, you know, zeros and ones and making up your own code. And it was just amazing. It was really amazing to see that happen. But we've moved to like, I would even say maybe two levels beyond that now, because it was the 80s. And then, you know, I was an engineer in the 90s. That's what we did. It was already, we didn't have to build the boxes anymore. They were out there. We had all the big boys, the Ciscos, the Microsofts, the IBMs and Dells that were making the machines. And we just had to slap a pretty picture on it, put all the parts together, make sure you had some configurations that you knew worked. Because even though, even in like the 2000s, even though everything by that point should have been plug and play, it still wasn't. You still had to have some knowledge behind that. But we're getting now to this new world where it's dumb and user friendly. No one has to think anymore. You don't have to be an engineer to get online. That's how it was in the old days. You know, computer science degree in the 80s in college did not exist. To get a computer science quote-unquote degree, you had to become an electrical engineer. That was computer science. And it's come to the point now where any idiot could cause damage on the internet. And that's kind of what's gotten us into this conundrum. Not only from the perspective that now the ones who are pulling all the strings behind the hard stuff that used to be what it required an engineering degree to even interface with. I mean, for God's sake, setting up a modem back in the old days was like engineering. You had to know baud rates and all this crazy stuff, port numbers. Who knew what that was back then? But, you know, it's kind of the point now where it's just point and click, big colorful green button, and you're online. You're doing damage. So the boys that now control the strings are making this so end-user friendly. And, of course, the other big thing that's happened throughout the history of us merging with the machine, at least in my lifetime, it's, if I had to put a big title and a red bow on it, that's what I would call it. This has been the slow, painful process of the evolution of man merging with machine. And they've made electronics, this is that whole Moore's Law thing, get smaller and smaller and smaller and compact more and more transistors into a smaller and smaller space. We are at that point right now where they've kept warning, I'm going to reach the end of what we can perform and how small it can get. But this is where this whole cloud computing thing comes in. Cloud computing, nano computing, wearable devices, implantables, swallowables. That's going to be a new term I will predict that you're going to see coming to the mainstream. Just like mobile, wearables will be big. Implantables will be big, but implant is kind of a scary word. So, you know, narrative networks, DARPA's narrative networks on how to spin the picture that you're going to sell to the public to get them to open their arms. Implantable, I don't think, would be a good marketing term. But swallowable might. you know, look, it doesn't hurt, Johnny. You just swallow it. And like we've looked at before, edible vaccines really went back at least to the 80s and probably before. But in the 80s, we looked at Dr. Arnston's work, Charles Arnston, where he started experimenting with bananas. One of the reasons he did that is because in the old days, vaccinations, and even in current days, you know, they have requirements for temperature, for storage, to keep them active, you know, so they don't expire. And when they take them down to those third world nations, you know, our open air petri dishes of the past, we have become now the petri dish of the future. We've just been sold to Big Pharma. We saw Brazil get sold to Big Pharma with the big Zika outbreak. And Oxitec has a factory there where they're actually, if you can even believe this, hopefully I can find the story when it comes time to do the notes. This is what like takes me so long to do these notes. If anyone was looking for the show yesterday, by the way, it was a half day for school. So by the time I was ready to rock and roll, it was already too late. And then I was busy all afternoon. So, being Mommy Entertainment Center, no, we had some stuff to get done. But I just couldn't get it done. So my show showed up about midnight with notes. But if anybody is impatient and doesn't want to wait for the notes or doesn't have time to wait for the notes, just know that there is an MP3 version that rips for all these shows. Go out to their show page. Mine happens to be ucy.tv/BTFC. And off to the left-hand, upper left-hand side, you will see that there is just a running list with dates, show, and dates. There's no titles on those because that's just an auto feed. But you'll be able to see today's show within like 5 minutes of it being done live there and listen to it as an MP3. But anyway, long story short, I don't remember even where I was going. I totally lost my train of thought now. Anyway, so yeah, I didn't get the show done until really late. Oh, the notes. Yeah, I hope I can remember. I hope I can find that story about Africa and something about Africa. I don't know. Open air feature dish. Oh, Brazil. Brazil. And they got sold with that whole Zika scare. Oxitec opened up a factory to start manufacturing those genetically modified mosquitoes down there so they can just let them out and combat it. But we have now an entire population where we had all these babies born. Remember, another epidemic of some sort of neurological or gray matter disorder that we'll be able to use some of our neuroscience that we've developed. I thought this mad science gone mad. These Apollo projects of the brain, these neuronal barcoding initiatives. We'll be able to fix you, Johnny. We'll be able to give you an implant or a zippity zap. Don't worry about it. You know, and that's the scary part. But listen, so we've gone even further. So we were reading a little bit about some real life cyborgs, a dragonfly that they had implanted with some little flashing lights in front of their eyes to be able to control them live while flying. We've read about robots made of E. coli that learns and evolves to end up having traits that are like more advanced animals, which is very frightening. We also had a worm brain who learned to navigate, and a cyborg cockroach as well as a moth. How long do you think it's going to be? As now DARPA is working with DARPA and Facebook, if you remember. Facebook also had a project from the Building 8 with Regina Duggan at the helm. She had moved over from DARPA to Google and worked on their ATAP program, which was for a lot of their mobile and wearable and tattoo type electronics. Remember, we listened to that interview with her. She'd also talked about the swallowable token to give you superpowers. You can wave your hands and authenticate something, whether it be in a room or your computer. I mean, that stuff is definitely coming. That is integrated now into some of this medical technology. See, that's how they're dangling that carrot to get us to step right up. We've talked about the psychology behind that before. You know, just a few short years ago, if we had mentioned to anybody about getting nanobots in your blood, people were like, what? Hell no. Yeah, look at the little flagella motor. I still can't say that. Flagello motor. Flageller, actually. When I was looking up a link for you guys last night, it's flagellar, A-R, motor. Apparently, they are quite natural, the flagellar motors. But what we've been doing is genetically modifying the bacteria that have natural flagellar motors to then be able to get them to do our bidding. And that's the scary part. So as they miniaturize these things, see, we don't have to get around Moore's Law anymore because we have genetic circuits that we are able to program as if they were a piece of hardware. And then we can build an operating system, whether it be augmenting that operating system that creates a living organism, or if we insert some of our own code to be able to take over, and that would be the DNA editing. At the very end of the show yesterday, we had started a story. It was about Jennifer Doudna. Jennifer Doudna is one of the co-founders of CRISPR technology. And what was really disturbing is that Jennifer Doudna, she's been in this battle with Georgie Porgy Church and his labs over at the Weiss Institute as to who actually owns the technology. And Jennifer Doudna has tended to take a more ethical view of what should be done with this technology, and her company won't do germline modification. Georgie Porgy Church, though, has gotten in bed with a lot of the federal agencies to help them along in their projects. And that's what's frightening. But Jennifer Doudna has written a memoir. That memoir was in collaboration with someone named Samuel Steinberg, who was a biochemist and a research colleague who she had worked with, called A Crack in Creation, Gene Editing and the Unthinkable Power to Control Evolution. Now, guys, as we're finding all of the chinks in the human armor, and, you know, one of those chinks is whether or not you're defective. And we found they were just sequencing over 700,000 genetic markers in that Ancestry.com database for all those people, naive people, who spent $99 to submit their spittle sample and then gave forever rights to do anything with their DNA to Ancestry.com. I mean, just think about that. And there was no limitation on what they could do with your biological data. That's really, really disturbing. Now, as we find that these rich tech billionaires and large tech companies and governments and international agencies are all involved in this technology. And then, of course, Israel. Israel, with their millions of U.S. dollars in collaboration, high-end collaboration projects on neuroscience, finding ways to read emotion by the sound of your voice. That was that one beyond emoti, or I don't know, I always forget, Emotive, I think was their name. And some of their technologies for reading, I don't know, they were reading other things out of brains. You know, we found out DARPA's been working on implanting memories and removing memories, all in the name of PTSD. They can read your dreams. We've done all of the frequency stuff and the microwave and the putting voices in your head using that sonic frequency in the microwave range. And there really are a lot of scary things. But listen to this, guys. So now let's continue on. Learning about the brain, May 23rd, 2017, out of Science Daily. This is out of the University of Amsterdam. new genetic roots for intelligence discovered. So, you know, in those future dystopic days, when they have a mass global DNA database of every single family lineage they've been able to trace back to maybe a certain pinpoint, who knows? I mean, as technology is getting better and AI is getting faster and smarter and the database is getting bigger, who knows what kind of information they're going to be able to garner about our history. They'll be able to backtrack us, I could guarantee you that, to just a few key lines. Then they'll be able to analyze the crossbreeding that happened and take a look at who is desirable and who has undesirable genes. And, you know, the thing is, like I've said before, who is defining desirable and undesirable? Well, it's the government, the military-industrial complex, the intelligence agencies, the think tanks, the universities, the scientists. It's not you and me. It's not us standing up as individuals pointing out, you know, why we were important. Maybe they're going to have to make people do that someday. You know, you're going to have to argue. It reminds me again of Twilight Zone. Argue about why they should allow you to consume resources on this planet that obviously has some problems. You know, the carbon quotient and all that. Your carbon number is up there, Johnny. It's time for elimination. It's called The Lottery. There was a book called The Lottery. And once a year, I think they had to pick numbers. And there was some unlucky individual that always got picked to get offed in the name of the good of the group. You know, that's what it's going to come down to, is the robots take all the jobs. Don't think that this is going to become the land of plenty like they keep promising you, because these robots will not be feeding you grapes. They will be finding you a vermin, because you're not going to serve any purpose. You're going to be lazy. You are going to be a troublemaker. It's going to be out and out war between the two species. And if they were smart, they would just take off. Maybe that's what they'll do. Maybe they'll get us to mine precious metals here for them, whatever they need to exist. I don't know, guys. I mean, just where this is all headed is not a good thing. So now they have identified the genetic roots for intelligence. Scientists have made a major advance in understanding the genetic underpinnings of intelligence using a large data set of more than 78,000 individuals. Ding, look, they fed the machine. The machine found our jinx. With more than 78,000 individuals with information on DNA, genotypes, and intelligence scores, the team discovered novel genes and biological roots for intelligence. Intelligence is one of the most investigated traits in humans, and higher intelligence is associated with important economic and health-related life outcomes. Guys, here you go. They're going to say, look, these are the people who tend to be go-getters, and these are the people who tend to be good breeding stock. This is not a good thing at all, despite high heritability estimates of 45% in childhood and 80% in adulthood. Only a handful of genes had previously been associated with intelligence, and for most of these genes, the findings were not reliable. The study, published in the journal Nature Genetics, uncovered 52 genes for intelligence, of which 40 were completely new discoveries. Most of these genes are predominantly expressed in brain tissue. I hope they don't need a biopsy. These results are very exciting as they provide, oh, I'm sure they are. Eugenics program commences. Because they provide very robust associations with intelligence. Notice they said earlier up here that they have high heritability, meaning they can be passed along through the gene line. The genes were detected are involved in the regulation of cell development and are specifically important in synapse formation, axon guidance, and neuronal differentiation. I wonder if they discovered this in the mini brain balls. These findings, for the first time, provide clear clues toward the underlying biological mechanisms of intelligence, says Danielle Postuma, principal investigator of the study. The study also showed that the genetic influences on the intelligence are highly correlated with genetic influences on educational attainment and also, albeit less strongly, with smoking cessation. Huh, that's interesting. Intracranial volume, head circumference in infancy, autism spectrum disorder, and height. Inverse genetic correlations were reported with Alzheimer's disease, depressive symptoms, smoking history, schizophrenia, waist-to-hip ratio, body mass index, and waist circumference. These genetic correlations shine light on common biological pathways for intelligence and other traits. Seven genes for intelligence are also associated with schizophrenia. Nine genes also with the body mass index, and four genes were also associated with obesity. You know what's interesting is that some of the metabolic pathways that glyphosate interact with are the cytochrome P450 enzyme pathway, and that is, I was just reading the other day about that, influences on that pathway have to be gene-coded because of the way that cytochrome P450 is set up, and I don't really, I mean, I'm not a biologist, so I don't really know, but I was reading pretty deep into it because that's where some of that histamine intolerance comes from. I was finding a correlation in some of the research with that cytochrome P450, and they were talking about it being some sort of genetic encoding enzyme. And so it's interesting because those are some of the very same diseases and metabolic degeneration that they find with exposure to glyphosate on the cytochrome P450. So, wonder if it's dumbing people down as well. Maybe the glyphosate is responsible for the 7-second attention span. I don't know. Just saying it's an interesting correlation. These three traits show that there's a negative correlation with intelligence, and that is depression, schizophrenia, hip to waist ratio, body mass index, and waist circumference. So a variant of genes with a positive effect on intelligence has a negative effect on schizophrenia, body mass index, or obesity. Future studies will need to clarify the exact roles of these genes in intelligence in order to obtain a more complete picture of how genetic differences lead to differences in intelligence. Current genetic results explain up to 5% of the total variance in intelligence. And although there are quite large amounts for variance as a trait of intelligence, there is a long road to go. Given the high heritability of intelligence, many more genetic effects are expected to be important, and these can only be detected in what? Even larger data samples. There you go, guys. See, and as you have people like Georgie Porgy Church working with the CIA's DARPA to reverse engineer the brain by barcoding neurons, and then you find out that there, and he is the father of CRISPR, and then you find out that they have discovered that there are genetic markers of intelligence as they are reverse engineering a brain. Ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling. We have Elon Musk and Google both building AI that are becoming super smarty pants. They are teaching themselves, and the way that Google and Elon Musk are both doing that through the OpenAI program and the something ML program. What was it called? I don't remember. Google's something ML program. What they've done is they have two artificial intelligences competing against each other to get smarter, and there are no humans required at all in this intervention. Google researchers are teaching their AI to also build its own more powerful AI. So what possibly could go wrong? Remember, this brain research isn't to cure you or to cure Nana. Fix Nana's Alzheimer's so she stops bumping into walls. No, no, no. This is to build a bigger, better machine. To be able to know all and see all and keep track of all in real-time data and provide you a nice, neat little dashboard on your mobile device. Google has announced another big push into artificial intelligence, unveiling a new approach to machine learning where neural networks are used to build better neural networks, essentially teaching AI to teach itself. Now, Cupid doll, for anyone who remembers what that is called. What is that term called? Because I warned you, this is how it was going to happen. This is why Kurzweil's law of exponential returns is possible. This is technology begetting technology. We've already found studies about little mommy robots building baby robots with some of her best traits to then make it better offspring. They were showing that there was evolution already happening in robots. Well, now let's make it a super duper pulsating electronic brain. Those artificial neural networks, these ones are designed to mimic the way the brain learns, and Google says that it is a new technology called AutoML, and it can develop networks that are more powerful, efficient, and easy to use. Google CEO Sundar Pichai showed off AutoML on stage at Google's I.O. 2017, which is the annual developer conference that Google throws for app coders and hardware makers to reveal where its products are heading next. The way it works is we take a set of candidate neural nets. Think of these as little baby neural nets, and we actually use a neural net to iterate through them until we arrive at the best neural net. That process is called reinforcement learning, where computers can link trial and error with some kind of reward, just like teaching a dog new tricks. It takes massive amounts of computational power to do so. But Google's hardware is now getting to the stage. Remember, they were doing a big upgrade. They called that big computer science professor out of retirement from one of the California universities. We talked about him a few weeks back to help them build this brand new computing architecture that's going to prevent them from having to double the size of their computer centers, and it will just make these computers doubly as powerful. Guys, really, we're in trouble. We're in big trouble. We have multinational corporations that are now going to be taking control with the know-all, see-all electronic brain in the cloud. That's literally what we're talking about here. And they're learning to reverse engineer the human brain and then reproduce the ways our brains learn and grow up in the digital world to then be able to run the show. And just wait, because it gets even worse. So, all right, so we know about Google's OpenML, and that's really kind of scary. We know that Google's AlphaGo kicked the butt of the human champion to that game called Go, super, super complex game, more complex than chess, which was quite a feat and is another Turing test to whether or not AI can be more intelligent than humans. Remember, we've been talking about these robotics now. Well, check this out. So the robots are going to come take all the jobs imbued with intelligence. And it's not only going to be some of the white-collar jobs like oncology, you know, IBM Watson, cancer doctor, or genomics, like IBM's learning genetics, or lawyers, like IBM Ross, being the first AI lawyer, or, I don't know, he's got all kinds of other jobs now. Oh, no, no, we also have those jobs that migrants once did. That would be like picking crops. What an apple picking robot means for the future of farm workers. Oh, we don't need any type of farm workers anymore. We just got this trusty apple Cruncher 2000, a California company, it was a California company too, has built an automated system that vacuums the fruit straight off of the tree. Robots are replacing human workers at a faster pace than any other point in history. And most of these robots are in factories, especially in China. But a new kind of mechanized worker has hit the apple orchards. Abundant Robotics in California has built an automated apple picker that uses a vacuum system to suck the fruit straight off of the tree. As a kid in Louisiana, I was inspired by agricultural equipment such as combines, cotton pickers, and tractors, says Abundant Robotics CEO Dan Steer. The work we are doing is an extension of several hundred years of technology innovation for agriculture. By the way, this is in Scientific American. Testing for the picker is underway in Australia, where apples are in season. And in the autumn, the prototype will return to the United States and continue its testing in Washington, where apple orchards are a significant part of the economy. And they are in New York State as well. 58% of the apples grown in the U.S. are from Washington, and probably another large majority is from New York. Harvesting apples isn't an unskilled job. It is highly skilled and difficult to work, says Todd Freeover of the Washington Apple Commission. Robotics will help the harvesting of the apples at an optimum time to provide the best possible apple to consumers. Unlike other kinds of harvesting, fruit picking requires a type of precision only capable by human eyes and hands. You can't just chop down a plant and scoop up what is there. The robot has got to be able to identify that apple, robot googly eyes, and then after that, tell if it is ripe, says Dan Swifford, an agricultural technologist at Virginia Tech. It takes a lot of specialized sensors, ding, and cameras to do that, and then they have to be able to pick the apple without damaging it. Meanwhile, the seasonal labor force who typically picks fruit trees can vary dramatically in size from one harvest to the next. We grow in the United States between 315 and 320,000 acres of apples for a fresh market, and labor demand per year ranges from 250 to 350 man hours per acre. That is not small. It is no secret we are facing a serious labor shortage in agriculture, so seeing companies devote time and funding to technology is welcomed, says Jim Baer, president and CEO of the U.S. Apple Association. We are calling for an overhaul of the H-2A visa program, maintaining the spirit of the program to increase its capacity and responsiveness. But currently, there are a few pieces of robotic farm equipment on the market. There are self-driving tractors and automated weed whackers. So if autonomous agriculture takes off, then at some point in the future, you might be eating an apple that was planted, watered, picked, sorted, and driven to your local grocery store without any human intervention at all. How crazy is that? Don't worry about it, because you might even be getting your new brain implant inserted by a robot. This robot can complete a 2-hour brain procedure in just 2.5 minutes. So neurosurgeons out of a job at some point in the future as well. Brain surgery is precision business, and one slip can spell doom for affected patients. This is out of sciencealert.com, May 19th, 2017. Even in one of the most skilled jobs in the world, human error can still be a factor. Researchers from the University of Utah are looking to provide less opportunity for those errors. A robot that the team is developing is able to reduce the time it takes to complete a complicated procedure by 50 times. According to CNN, the robot can, CNN, a good source, the robot can reduce the time it takes to drill into the skull from 2 hours to 2.5 minutes. Now that's got to make you feel all warm and fuzzy inside. Oh, I'm so excited at robotic innovation. We can now drill into the skull in just 1/100th of the time, from 2 hours to 2.5 minutes. Research was published in the Journal of Neurosurgical Focus, and the team says that is a proof of principle that the robot is capable of performing complex surgeries. The robot is guided around vulnerable areas of the skull by data gleaned from CAT scans and entered into its programming. The CAT scan shows the programmer the location of the nerves or veins that the bot will have to avoid. The team's lead neurosurgeon, William Calderwell, told CNN that we can program it to drill the bone out safely by using the patient's CAT scan criteria. Aside from the obvious life-saving capabilities that such a machine would have, it also could potentially save money in the long run. Shorter surgery times would allow for lower-cost surgery as well. So guess what, Johnny? Your national health insurance is trying to reduce costs, so you're not going to get the neurosurgeon. You're going to get the robotic surgery. Just sit still in that chair. It won't hurt too much. You hear a little bit of grinding, and you'll smell a little bit of burning flesh, but don't mind that. The robot will do it. He knows exactly what he's doing. He's got 250,000 man-hours under his belt. This is very scary. Robotics and automation are slowly transforming the way doctors are performing their surgeries, and some patients may initially balk at the thought of a machine cutting into them, yeah, especially into your skull, and messing with their insides. But these robots can perform with a precision that may be impossible for humans to achieve. Well, talking about brains and messing around with brains, if anyone remembers back, maybe the end of last year, November 14th, 2016, experiment to raise the dead. And we talked about this under the guise of those little mini brain balls. They were creating little mini human brains in a petri dish, utilizing those IPM stem cells that you scrape right off your skin and mix them up with a little chemical cocktail, and they turn into stem cells that can be then coaxed to be any other cell in the body. And they made these little mini brains, and they said, oh, look, these are little thinking mini brains that have no sensory input, but maybe we could use them as part of a multifaceted treatment to raise brain-dead patients from their slumber. And they had gotten authorization at one point from, I think it was the Food and Drug Administration or, FDA, to be able to recruit the families of 20 brain dead people and cart them over to India to be able to get transcranial lasers as nerve stimulation, some sort of zippity zap, electrical pulses and light, and then as well as some of these stem cells to see if they could regenerate gray matter. Well, here's what they found. It's a company called BioQuark. On November 14, 2016, the publication Science released a story, Experiment to Raise the Dead Blocked in India. The Indian Council of Medical Research has derailed a controversial experiment that would seek to revive its brain dead accident victims. On November 11, 2016, the National Institute of Medical Statistics removed the quote-unquote reanima trial, yes, like in Reanimator, from India's clinical trial registry. And in May, Hemiashu Bansal, an orthopedic surgeon at Anupam Hospital in North Indian state of Uttarakhand, announced plans to give around 20 brain-dead people a mix of interventions, including injections of, I thought they were IPS, but this says mesenchymal stem cells, as well as peptides, transcranial laser stimulation, and median nerve stimulation. The transcranial laser stimulation involves shining pulses of near-infrared light into the brain. Median nerve stimulation is the electrical stimulation of the major nerve that runs from the neck to the arm, and both techniques have been shown to improve cognition in patients with traumatic brain injury. BioQuark, a biotech firm based in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, has agreed to supply the trial with peptides that are said to help regenerate brain cells. The interviews with Indian media in the spring, Bisnell described his aim is bringing brain-dead individuals back to a minimally conscious state in which the patient shows flickers of consciousness, such as moving their eyes to track objects, although there is scant evidence that brain-dead people can recover such function. Barzan Bansal says that the medical literature describes a significant number of cases of people who have recovered full consciousness from a minimally conscious state. So, like, how horrifying is that? And even in one of our mad offshore science countries like India, an experiment like that got canned. I was really surprised when that happened. Well, listen to this, guys. Thanks to Dal out of chat, I was tipped off to this experiment now popping up in another part of the world. And this would be in South America. Hold on. I didn't have it queued up. Please excuse me. It was just 5 minutes before the show. We had the obligatory browser crash that then caused me to not be here when my music started because then I didn't have coffee. It was pretty horrifying. I almost had to do a whole hour without a fresh cup of coffee. All right, here we go. Out of the Daily Mail, June 6, 2016. This is today. Could we soon reverse death? U.S. company to start trials, quote unquote, reawakening the dead in Latin America in a few months. And this is how they'll do it. A U.S. firm called Ding-a-ling BioQuark plans to test stem cell therapy on brain-dead patients. This method, which has not been tested on animals, will be tested in Latin America, just like I was talking about Brazil and the whole quote-unquote Zika epidemic, and them becoming one of the first open-air petri dishes for genetically modified mosquitoes. Latin America, we'll have another country that has been sold to Big Pharma. This team outlined a trial proposal last year to do in India, but they were shut down. The first attempts to bring people back from the dead are slated to start this year. BioQuark, a Philadelphia-based company, announced that late in 2016 that they believe brain death is not irreversible. And now CEO Ira Pastor has revealed that they will be testing an unprecedented stem cell method on patients in an unidentified country in Latin America. I bet you it's Brazil. Confirming the details within the next few months. To be declared officially dead, in the majority of countries, you have to experience complete and irreversible loss of brain function or, quote-unquote, brain death. According to Pastor, BioQuark has developed a series of injections that can reboot the brain, just like a computer, and they plan to try it out on humans this year. The inaugural stage of the trial will likely follow the plans laid out last year for a trial in India, but which was thwarted. They even used my words. Initially, Pastor and his collaborator Himeshyal Bansal, an orthopedic surgeon, planned to carry out the first test in India. Days after announcing their ambitions, the plan was blocked by the Indian Council of Medical Research, urging the duo to take their trials someplace else. However, the study record detail gave a wider public an idea on how they plan to approach these trials. The first stage, named First in Human Neuroregeneration and Neuroreanimation, was slated to be a non-randomized, single-group proof-of-concept study. The team said they plan to examine individuals aged 15 to 65 declared brain dead from traumatic brain injury using MRI scans in order to look for possible signs of brain death reversal. Specifically, they plan to break it down into three stages, which they would harvest stem cells from the patient's own blood, so not from the skin, and then inject this back into their body. Next, the patient will receive a dose of peptides injected into their spinal cord, so these would maybe be some sort of repairing protein. And finally, they would undergo a 15-day course of nerve stimulation involving lasers and median nerve stimulation, as well to try to bring about the reversal of brain death whilst monitoring the patients using MRIs. The idea of consent, we had talked about that when the story originally came out. Like, did these guys ever ink anything that said you could use me as an experimental guinea pig and bring me back as a zombie? Because I doubt it. The idea of consent in this context is complicated since the patients are all technically dead. However, the definition of death is also more blurry than it once was. Confirming death used to be straightforward when the heart stopped breathing and a person was unresponsive and no longer breathing. They were dead. But now it is more complex since we have more advanced ways to keep oxygen pumping through the body, keeping the brainstem functioning, for example, by putting them on a ventilator. And that means in most countries today, including the US and the UK, they identify death as a permanent loss of the brain stem function. The BioCork trials are part of a broader project called Reanima for all those dead billionaires that are cryogenically frozen somewhere with their cryogenic trust set up to protect their assets while they're, quote unquote, sleeping, taking the long cold sleep. And guys, it's really scary, but you know this technology is going to be used for things such as that. It's going to be used for maintaining the cell lines of the progeny, of the people, of the powerful families who can afford it. And we will be used as the reanima guinea pigs to figure out all the chinks in the human armor to turn us into experimental creatures that then in the end of the experiment have no value. They usually destroy lab animals after experiments are done. That's what's going to happen to us. That's why it doesn't matter. And they're planning on also getting off this rock. That's why it doesn't matter if they destroy the ecosystem of this planet, because they already know what they're looking for. And hey, they can terraform. Earth is just the petri dish. So anyway, this Reanima project is going to be taking place in some unnamed Latin American country. I would really laugh my ass off. No, I wouldn't, but I would give myself a gold star for dot connection if it happens to be Brazil. I don't know, something funny happened in Brazil. They sold out their people. Somebody got a chunk of change somewhere, and those people inked their consent without even knowing it. So where do we end up? So we are now at the point of reverse engineering brains, bringing brains back from the dead with reanimation, at least as an experiment, proof of concept, clinical trial. We are barcoding neurons. We are creating artificial intelligence that will duel against each other. We have robots that will be taking jobs that were once those jobs that no one else wanted. And we have robot surgeons that will be able to drill a hole in your skull for a skull drilling that usually takes 2 hours in about 2.5 minutes. Well, how much worse can it get? Well, how about this one? NATO. Yes, NATO. The global war machine wants to use artificial intelligence in decision making. What? Oh, yes, they do. NATO, known as the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, believes in incorporating artificial intelligence in its decision-making process, a senior official told CNBC. And this was from June 4th, 2017. CNBC.com. A 68-year-old military alliance is committing to explore technological advancements with effective mobilization of data and human capital among its key areas to focus, says General Denis Mercier, NATO's Supreme Allied Commander Transformation. Speaking on the sidelines of the Shangri-La Dialogue over the weekend, an annual gathering of defense ministers, Mercier told NATO, quote, "We need to develop a better big data approach, cloud-like architectures, and make an extensive use of AI. AI could be within anti-access aerial denial systems, he says. Skynet, referring to global defense structures designed to destroy or prevent enemy forces from entering land, sea, or air spaces. They're talking about anti-access denial systems. The key issue is the distribution of data and how we can, through that, empower subordinate levels of command when it is necessary to take action. That's not what we do today, but this is really what we need to be available to do in the future. And a good way of dealing with these integrated and highly complex systems, yes, that are big pulsating brains in the cloud, is to look at the technological tools that are available that can help NATO, quote, build architectures to make these systems all work together. The prospect of AI delivering strategic verdicts on key NATO issues was the, quote, next step. Donald Trump has criticized NATO members for failing to contribute more to defense spending. Oh, again, problem, reaction, solution, bigger, better, faster, cheaper. Let's let the robots do it. But Mercer said the issue wasn't a contentious one. Sharing the burden of defending the North Atlantic community is a defining concept of NATO. This is not new, he says. But Article 3 of the Washington Treaty, which is the organization's founding agreement, stipulates that members must maintain and develop an individual and collective capacity to resist an armed attack. Thus, responsibilities lie within the nations, Mercier said. So put on a seatbelt, people. Skynet is coming, and it is not going to just be our military. It's going to be the global military alliance that will be putting big data and eyeballs in the sky. And last but not least, in the last 30 seconds, and this is where we're going to pick up tomorrow, if it can't get any worse, Europe's latest billion-dollar startup wants to build the Matrix for reality. All right, guys, make sure you stick around. It is Tuesday, tons of live radio tonight. Have an awesome Tuesday, and I will catch up with you tomorrow. Can I hold it down? Where's my bumper? Maybe I'm just not hearing it.